Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is Episode 4, recorded January 21st, 2009.
Hello, Russ.
Hi, Kelly. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. What do we get to talk about today?
Today we're going to talk about do-it-yourself CO2.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited about it. We're going to give you a little information about the applications of do-it-yourself CO2, materials you'll need, troubleshooting, frequently asked questions, any observations, and so on. Just everything you need, really, to get set up with do-it-yourself CO2.
Okay, so what is CO2 for? Who needs to use this?
Okay, well, CO2 is basically to grow plants. You don't need CO2 to grow a lot of plants, but it does improve the growth rate of plants, the health and vitality of plants, and it also improves the ability of plants to outcompete algae. So it is pretty useful for those reasons. It's important to recognize, though, that CO2 is really only useful if you're getting sufficient light. CO2 is one of the limiting factors to plant growth. There are several things that plants need. They need light. They need water. They need nutrients, such as nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, iron, and a whole bunch of micronutrients that they need in very small quantities. They need all those things, but they also need carbon dioxide. In a normal tank, any tank, there will be a certain amount of carbon dioxide that they can use to grow. But unless you're adding CO2, the CO2 is in a small enough quantity that they're not going to be able to surpass a certain growth rate. If you do add CO2, though, you can boost that growth rate just because there's enough of it that they are then able to use the nutrients and the light and so on at a faster rate. But it only works if other things are in balance as well. If you don't have enough light, CO2 is not going to help. You need at least about 1.5 watts per gallon to benefit from CO2, but if you step up the light, you can step up the utilization of CO2 as well. So at 2 watts per gallon, you're going to see better growth with CO2 than at 1.5 watts per gallon. At 3 or even more watts per gallon, you pretty much need CO2 to enable the plants to be able to outcompete algae, or you're going to have a lot of algae problems.
Okay. You mentioned you don't need it for all plants. Can you give us kind of a short list of the most common plants that you do need it and that you don't need it?
Well, I would say that most plants can survive without supplemental CO2. They will grow more slowly in general. And there are certain plants that don't actually benefit from CO2 in the water much or don't seem to. One of those would be Anubias. They don't seem to benefit a whole lot from it. I've grown them with and without CO2. The rate seems about the same.
Are they fairly low-light plants?
And they're fairly low-light plants. Then there are others like Java fern, which does fine without CO2. But will grow faster with it, so on. In general, you can say plants do grow faster with CO2, but there are plenty of plants you can grow without it.
Okay, so this is really good for people who really like planted tanks, are trying to propagate plants.
Right. If you're interested in having a really nice, beautiful planted tank with a lot of light, with a lot of lush, fairly quick growth, you need CO2. It's possible to have a really nice planted tank without CO2. I have some planted tanks that work just fine without CO2, but the ones where I'm growing plants quickly, I want to, you know, give the plants the best possible conditions, then I'm using CO2.
Okay, so in order to set up a do-it-yourself CO2, what materials do we need?
Okay, well, you need to set up the CO2 generator, or CO2 reactor, whatever you want to call that, and that would be in a container. Usually it's something like a soda bottle, a juice bottle, something like that, that is outside the aquarium. And that's the home for the yeast that's going to be growing, that's going to be generating the do-it-yourself CO2. So you need at least one soda bottle or juice bottle, something like that.
So they could just get, you know, whatever pop bottle or soda bottle they've already used up, they can rinse that out.
Right.
And just use that.
Right. Soda bottles, pop bottles tend to be fairly good because they're fairly strong and the lids screw on fairly tightly.
They were made to handle CO2 in the first place.
Well, soda bottles specifically are made to handle liquid under pressure from CO2. So those are pretty effective as far as that goes. So I tend to use a lot of soda bottles, but I do use some juice bottles as well. You will also need
How big does it need to be?
It depends on the size of
the tank. A soda bottle is a soda bottle, but if you're using a juice bottle, like half a gallon, a gallon?
It depends on the size of your tank. I recommend for a 10-gallon tank, you'll want at least one soda bottle. I prefer to use two on most of my tanks. But you can get good results on a tank up to 20 gallons with two 2-liter soda bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And then just step it up. If you're doing a 55-gallon tank, you know, a lot of people don't recommend do-it-yourself CO2. Instead, they get a CO2 pressurized cylinder.
For the bigger tanks.
For a bigger tank. But some people, you know, they'll go up to a 55-gallon tank and they'll put 4-gallon containers on that one tank, and then they get a fair amount of CO2. So that is one way to do it. But, you know, anywhere between 10 and 30 gallons, you're probably fine with two soda bottles or maybe two larger juice bottles for a total of maybe 4 liters.
Okay.
The larger end of the scale. Okay. So you need some bottles like that. You need a drill to make holes in the lids of the containers. You'll need some rigid airline tubing, that the thinnest gauge airline tubing that you normally find in an aquarium store. That's just a slightly thinner than the vinyl tubing, silicone tubing that you use for airline tubing that we're used to. You'll need some T-valves.
Are those in the pet stores as well?
Those are in the pet stores as well for airline tubing. And some check valves. Okay. T-valves maybe are kind of optional, but a check valve, you really ought to have that. And that is basically to keep the water from your aquarium from siphoning back into your CO2 bottle and to keep the solution that you're growing your yeast in out of your aquarium. So you really do need a check valve.
Okay, and the check valves are also available at most aquarium stores?
Available at any, yeah, local fish store or aquarium store. You will also need some either hot glue or silicone adhesive for aquariums, something like that to make sure there's a good seal around the airline tubing, the rigid airline tubing. You also need a length of airline tubing. I prefer to use...
It's different than the rigid?
Different from the rigid tubing, yeah. You'll need some of the flexible style. The vinyl, you can use it. It works okay. But apparently, some of the CO2 is lost through it. It kind of diffuses through it. Mm-hmm. And the CO2 kind of damages it, so you have to replace it more frequently. The silicone tubing is better, if you can get that, rather than the vinyl tubing. And there is a black, some sort of plastic tubing that's made specifically for CO2, and I have some of that, and you lose very little CO2 through that, so that may be the best.
Is that a little harder to find, though?
Yeah, but you can get it fairly easily online. You do a search on internet auctions, Aquabid, that kind of thing, you can find it. But really, the silicone adhesive is adequate. Even the vinyl works tolerably well, especially if you're just, you know, doing one tank or something like that. So any one of those really works as far as the tubing goes. And then you'll need the ingredients for the yeast solution, the culture solution, mm-hmm. for the yeast. You will need some sugar and some water and some yeast. Those are the basic ingredients. You definitely need those three. If you want to get a little better results, you'll want to get some molasses, especially the type of sulfur, and if you can get that, and some protein powder. Any protein powder you use, like soy protein powder, whey protein, the kind of thing you'll get for someone who wants to bulk up on the exercise, or just about anything like that will work.
Okay.
And some people use a little baking soda. I have. I don't use it anymore. I used to, but some people add a little baking soda too. So those, I think, are just about all the ingredients you'll need.
Okay, so we need the container, a drill, you need to use a drill, check valves, T-valves, rigid tubing, and the non-rigid airline tubing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ingredients-wise...
Some sort of adhesive as well.
Oh, the
silicone adhesive,
yes. Silicone
adhesive or
okay.
Hot glue.
And then the sugar and the yeast and the water, plus optional ones to make it work a little better, the molasses and
the protein
the
powder.
Protein powder.
Mm-hmm. And maybe baking soda.
Okay, once I have all this stuff together... And the people who live in the house with you are going, what on earth are you doing?
Yeah.
What do I need to do to set up the CO2?
Okay. Well, first you make your bottle, you modify your bottle or your bottles. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I recommend two bottles because then you can have them on rotation, so to speak. But anyway, to modify the bottle, you drill a hole that is slightly smaller, so that it's a very snug fit, slightly smaller than the rigid airline tubing.
Okay.
And then you insert the rigid airline tubing. It should be so you kind of have to force it in there, so there's quite a tight fit.
How long of a piece is the rigid airline tubing?
About 2 inches.
So not very big.
Give or take. No, it's not very long.
It's just to insert.
Yeah, you'll want to cut it. Usually you buy it in maybe a 6-foot length, and you'll need to cut a couple of inches off. Mm-hmm. It's not critical, really, how long it is, but a couple inches is
okay.
Good. Cut that. Insert it in there. Make sure it's a nice tight fit. and then use either the hot glue or the silicone adhesive. The silicone adhesive is probably better in the long run. The trade-off is you have to wait longer for it. You really ought to wait maybe 36 hours before you use it.
To be all the way dry.
But yeah, that's fine. And if you don't want to use the rigid airline tubing, there are other alternatives out there. I've used the connectors for the disposable air stones. You can take those off and use those instead of a piece of rigid airline tubing. There are other connectors, little plastic sort of nozzles that are made to connect two pieces of airline tubing together. You can use those too. There's a lot of options out there. Anyway, whatever you use, you attach that, glue it in, let the glue cure, and then you're pretty much ready. You attach your airline tubing.
And that goes
a length of maybe
inside the rigid or over
Over the outside edge of the airline tubing. You put a length of the flexible tubing, maybe about a foot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to hook two bottles together, which I do recommend, you put your T valve right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you're attaching the two bottles, and then you make kind of a Y with a length of tubing that'll head towards the check valve. If not, then just attach directly to, if you're just using one bottle, attach your check valve so that the pressure is going towards the tank and away from the bottles.
Okay.
After you've done that, everything's connected, then you can start with your solution. There are two ways to go with this. Well, more than two ways to go, but I'll give you the basic two schools of thought on this.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the minimalist approach. People say, well, all yeast really needs to work is sugar. So they add they fill the 2-liter soda bottle up until just up to the label, the top of the label of the bottle,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, room temperature, kind of tepid water, somewhere around there. And then they add 2 cups of sugar and a pinch of yeast.
And they just kind of slosh it around so it mixes up a little bit?
Yeah, you can put a solid lid, one that hasn't been modified, on it, shake it up, and then you screw everything on, make sure your check valve is engaged and everything, and then you'll send the hose into the tank. We'll talk a little bit more about what you do once you get the end of your flexible tubing in the tank, but for now, you let the yeast sit, and within, depending on the temperature in your house, maybe a couple of hours, maybe a day or so, but pretty soon you'll get some CO2 production coming out of that yeast.
And can you feel that when you touch the bottle? Does it feel kind of tight in the bottle when it's producing it? Or is that just if it's not hooked up to the tank?
If it's not hooked up to the tank, if there's a solid lid on it, then you can definitely feel the bottle starting to pressurize. It's firm to the touch.
Okay.
If it's hooked onto the tank, you won't feel it because the CO2 will be coming out of the tube.
Going out.
Yeah, you won't feel it. But that's the minimalist approach because you're not adding these extra ingredients. But there's a yeast geneticist. And her last name is Nyberg, something like that. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but she's also an aquarist, and she has some good information out there. She has a PowerPoint presentation that's available on the internet, and check the resources page, and I'll direct you to some more information about what she's done and how I learned how to do this. It's her recipe. Is the non-minimalist approach. She, as a yeast geneticist, says that the best way to raise yeast is to keep the sugar content in their solution at about 10%. Now, if you add 2 cups to that 2-liter bottle with that water where I said up at the top of the label, you're getting about 20% yeast sugar concentration, which is really bad for the yeast. It'll actually kill the yeast eventually because too much sugar is not healthy for yeast, but too much alcohol, which is a byproduct of the yeast metabolizing that sugar and turning it into CO2 and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
that alcohol will actually kill them at about 20%, which is about what you'll get. So, in the minimalist approach, what happens to stop the production of CO2 from your bottle is the yeast is actually killed by the alcohol it produces. If you use the other approach, which is filling the bottle, 2-liter bottle, up to the top of the label, adding 1 cup of sugar, about a half a tablespoon, a tablespoon of molasses, and about a teaspoon of the protein powder, and a pinch of yeast.
Mm-hmm.
The yeast has more to work with. The protein is good for it. The molasses gives it some trace elements and things that are good for it. And the fact that the sugar concentration is lower makes the alcohol concentration lower. So the yeast doesn't actually die. It just runs out of sugar to metabolize. So the yeast will stay active longer. and alive, and so all you have to do later on is just dump out most of the solution, but not all of it. Replace the fresh solution in there, and that yeast that's in there is already alive and active and ready to go, and you'll get production sooner. And you also have to change the bottles less often.
So it kind of salts the next bottle, so to speak.
Yeah, kind of. It's kind of a subculture. Subculture of the yeast. So yeah, you keep an active culture pretty much all the time. And I think, now this is just anecdotal evidence, I don't have any empirical data to back this up, but I think that the yeast probably undergoes some selection for temperature and conditions in your house, and so that you're more likely to get a yeast that's going to succeed by just using yeast that already exists in your bottle. It seems to be working that way in my house. If I have a tank in a cool room and I use that yeast that I've already been using, it tends to produce faster, or seems to tend to produce faster and be healthier, a healthier, more robust producer of CO2 by using that than if I start out with new yeast. So I haven't actually added new fresh yeast from the freezer to my cultures for months. I just rely on starting it with the old yeast that's already in there, and it seems to work pretty well. But I do recommend using the Nyberg or Nyberg recipe. Once again, check that out on the resources page. But as I said, that seems to work better in general for a lot of reasons. So once you've got the yeast bubbling, mm-hmm. Now how are you going to get it into your water? Well, some people just find a way, they use a suction cup or something and attach the tube down near the lower part of the tank and just let it bubble straight up through the water. Now you might get a little CO2 because CO2 is very soluble in water. So a little of it is going to end up in your tank, but probably not very much. And I don't really tend to favor that method.
It's like as the bubbles just rise at the top and pop, and then the gases escape at the top of the water. So they're not going in the water? They're already...
Well, yeah, once it escapes and hits the atmosphere, it's not going to end up in the water all that much. Yeah. But as it's going up through the water, it's going to lose a little CO2 to the water. I don't think it's very efficient. Doesn't seem to work all that well when I take measurements. The CO2 doesn't seem to get into the water very well. So instead, this is what I use. Well, I'll tell you, some other people use an air stone. You put an air stone in the end, the bubbles that come out are going to be smaller, so you're going to get more surface area, so you're going to get better absorption of the CO2, but I don't think that's the best method either. You can get a CO2 diffuser, which is basically almost like an air stone. Usually they're made of glass, and they have a special kind of ceramic disc at the top. And so the CO2 builds up a lot of pressure in the little glass bubble on one side, and then as it goes through the ceramic disc, it diffuses a little more efficiently, quite a bit more efficiently than some of the other methods. And so that's a pretty good way to do it.
Where would people find one of those?
Aquarium stores will sometimes have those. The best source is generally the internet, Aquabid, things like that, or any online supplier that carries
specialist
plant supplies. Mm-hmm. But they're very available, fairly affordable. You can usually get one for a few dollars, a small one at least, for a small tank. Maybe 10 gallons or less might be just a few dollars. If you're getting one for a larger tank, it's probably going to cost a bit more. There are other ways to do it too. You can check some other resources out on the internet, but here's a really easy way to do it, and the way I tend to favor, I do use ceramic diffusers, glass and ceramic diffusers, but I also use this method, which is really pretty easy. I think this is one that Karen Randall suggested. She's an aquarium plant expert. One thing she does is take the end of the tube that's bubbling CO2 into the water, and she will attach it to the intake or the power filter. Those bubbles are pulled up into the power filter, and they hit the little impeller wheel that's inside there that's pulling the water up. And when it hits those little paddles of the impeller wheel, it chops the bubbles up and sends them out into the tank in a very small size, and some of them are trapped in the filter media and everything, and they diffuse very well. It's a pretty efficient way to do it. So you'll get a lot of CO2 in your tank that way. It's cheap. You don't have to buy any other things because you're probably already going to have a power filter in there. Really pretty effective method. And you'll know that it's working. You can just listen to it. It makes a really satisfying little sound. It goes a little something like this. Now, wasn't that beautiful, ladies and gentlemen? That is the sound of a do-it-yourself CO2 generator. at work. Beautiful sound. It means you're getting some lovely CO2 for your plants. Now, so check out some other methods, but those are the two methods that I have used a lot and tend to recommend.
Okay. Okay, after you get it going for a while, what kind of maintenance do these systems need? And how do you, you know, change the solution, troubleshooting, that kind of thing?
Okay. Well, as far as changing the solution, if you use the minimalist method with just the sugar, the yeast, and the water, maybe a pinch of baking soda, you're going to need to change the bottle out, maybe, depending on temperature and various other things, about every 10 days or so.
By change the bottle out, you mean change the solution in the bottle?
Yes, like empty the bottle out and replace it. No, and replace it with a new solution. Right, you don't need to make a new bottle. That's probably about how often you'll need to do it. If you use the Nyberg recipe, you may not need to do it for maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, even a month. It lasts a lot longer. But that's why I recommend the two-bottle system. Because the two-bottle system, let's say if you change one bottle every week on the minimalist system, then you're always having a flow of CO2 because one bottle is still in active production while you're changing the one that's beginning to slow down. And so you may just go a couple of hours where, since you open the system, you're going to lose pressure. And so for maybe less than an hour even, you're going to lose some CO2, but within a short time, you'll get CO2 again. And so that's why I recommend two bottles. You only take one off and change one every time you do it. With the Nyberg recipe, I only have to change one bottle on a two-bottle system about every 2 weeks. So each bottle's changed about a month, but you get a pretty steady supply of CO2. So that's about all you have to do. You put in the same solution. I recommend leaving about, maybe a sixth to an eighth of the solution in the bottle, and then just adding new solution to it. That is enough to get the yeast culture going again.
And as far as replacing the bottles or the tubing, really, how often does that need to be done? Just when it wears out?
It partly depends on the materials you use. If you use hot glue, it'll probably wear out more quickly than if you use silicone, and so on. Some types of bottles are more prone to wear out. The threads on the bottle lids can actually wear out eventually, and you'll have to replace them. But usually once a year, sometimes less often, depending on, you know, once again, the materials. I find that soda bottles tend to last a bit better than the juice bottles because the juice bottle lids tend to distort and the threads strip a bit more quickly than on the soda bottles.
Okay.
So, yeah, as far as that goes, it lasts a very long time.
Are there any troubleshooting tips we need to know?
Well, yeah. When you're first starting out, you might notice that you're not getting any bubbles coming out. And if that's true, it usually means there's a leak somewhere. Check all the fittings. Check the lid to make sure it's screwed on tight. Check the seal around the rigid airline tubing. Make sure that's tight. Make sure the airline hose itself is attached securely to the rigid hose, so the flexible hose is attached securely. Make sure there aren't any holes in the flexible tube, and so on. Go through all of that. Replace anything if necessary, and then you should be getting bubbles. If you're not, check the temperature. The temperature in the house, the temperature that the bottle itself is at, is going to be a factor in some cases. There was once when I had an office that was air-conditioned just too much. It was ridiculous. It was pretty cold in there, and I really wasn't getting much CO2 because the yeast was just too cold. It couldn't produce much. And so I put both of the CO2 bottles in a waterproof plastic container and put a heater in it. And the heater kept the water warm enough, which in turn kept the yeast warm enough, which allowed the CO2 to produce. So that's sometimes a factor. Just check the temperature in the room. If it's below about 70 or so, check that. That may be an issue.
Okay.
Try that. Anything else? Well, it's important to mention a good thing when you want to introduce CO2 into your water. When you agitate the surface of the water a lot, such as with an air stone or a waterfall filter that drops water from a couple of inches down into the water, anything that's really causing a lot of surface tension to break up, that is going to reduce the amount of CO2 in your water to match that is in the air, which is a much lower concentration than that which you'll be introducing with do-it-yourself CO2. So keep it to a minimum. use a power filter, but fill the water up so that the waterfall goes directly into the water and with a minimum of water movement. Don't use a sponge filter. Now, how do you measure how much CO2 is getting into your aquarium? We haven't really gotten to that yet, but that's something we need to talk about as well. Well, the best way to do it, or the easiest way to do it, I should say, is indirectly. If you measure the pH, that will tell you something about the CO2. If your pH is going down from what it is normally at, then that's a good sign that you're introducing carbon dioxide into the water. So before you put your do-it-yourself CO2 module onto your tank, test your pH, and then a few hours after it's been bubbling for a while, then test it again and do that several times. Usually, well, my pH, depending on where I've lived, is usually around 8.2 down to 7.8, maybe somewhere in there. When I put CO2 on it, it goes down to somewhere between 7.0 and 7.2 usually. So that's pretty good. That's desirable. It's a nice comfortable range for most fish and plants and so on. And it gives you an indication that the CO2 is definitely dissolving in the water. Now, if you already have water that's very soft, you need to be careful with introducing too much CO2 in the water, because you can get the pH to go down so low that it's dangerous. With my waters with some natural buffers in it, I don't really have to worry about it, but some people add a little crushed coral in a media bag in their filter or something like that if they already have fairly soft water to counteract the possible pH crashes. Be careful not to leave CO2 bottles with active solution in them with a lid on it.
You mean a solid lid, not a lid?
Right, a solid lid.
Had a hole put in it.
Right, because in the best situation, that's a problem. You're building some pressure up. And if you leave it there for an hour or so, it might not be an issue. But if you leave it there for several days and then open it, if you've got an active bottle of CO2, you could get a big mess. It's happened to me. One time I left a bottle there for several days. I do not recommend that.
It's kind of like opened up. Shaking up a soda can.
Yeah,
except it would be really
worse.
Stinky.
Worse and very, very smelly, because both types of CO2, the minimalist version and the Nyberg recipe, they both stink. Just the sugar and water and yeast smells yeasty. It's not a pleasant smell. But when you add that protein powder and the molasses, something really... It really reeks, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a magisterial palm.
Yeah, I would like to add, when you're dumping out your old solution, don't dump it in your kitchen sink. Whoever you live with will not thank you.
Yeah, because it will linger for a few minutes. It's not a good smell.
The toilet
is appropriate.
And then light a match.
Yeah, it's really quite stinky. It's not stinky when it's being bubbled into your tank, so don't worry about that.
Yeah.
It's not an issue.
It's only when you open the bottles.
Right. It's only when you open the bottles that have been used for a while. And it only lasts for a couple of minutes until it disperses again. But it's quite powerful, so just be prepared to deal with that. But if you're not prepared to deal with that, do try the minimalist approach if you want to try CO2. Because the stink is much less noticeable. But either way, it's really not an issue is if you're just prepared to dump it down the toilet and... You know, wait a couple of minutes and it will disperse.
Is there anything else we need to know?
Well, let me tell you this. If I had known about do-it-yourself CO2 earlier, well, I did know about it before I started it. I started it probably about 4.5 years ago, something like that. Before that, I had read about it and thought, oh, this sounds interesting. I should try it. But I thought, well, maybe my water's too hard. Maybe this would be too tricky. Maybe I'm just not going to try this right now. Then I kicked myself later when I tried it and realized how easy it was and what a great effect it had. Okay, I started out with a 10-gallon tank when I first hooked up CO2. It was a 10-gallon tank with 2 watts of light per gallon. I had several plants in there. I think I had some Vallisneria and some water sprite. Probably a few other things. Anyway, the plants in there were not doing all that well. They weren't exactly dying, they weren't exactly thriving, but they weren't really doing much. And I put the CO2 on there, and I was amazed. Within a week, it was obvious that these plants were extremely content. They were growing like crazy, and I have never been disappointed since. And this is just, I don't have a CO2 canister. It's all do-it-yourself CO2. But any tank I put it on, there's a very pronounced difference. Even with fairly low light tanks, like I say, 1.5 watts per gallon, I have a tank that's 3 watts per gallon. I have several tanks that are just various wattages, but it's worth it. It makes a big difference. If you want to grow plants beyond a few select low light plants, it's worth it. So I recommend giving it a try. Check out the resources page. There are a lot of other sites that can give you even more information on it. You may want to decide to upgrade to a fully automated CO2 system with canisters and solenoid valves and timers and all sorts of things that will make it fun, high-tech, expensive gadgetry. But you can really get great benefits from just a do-it-yourself soda bottle CO2 system.
In putting the canister with the tubing and everything together, it would be really helpful, I think, for people to see some pictures so they know exactly what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We can put that on the resource page. Put some pictures up that will show you kind of step-by-step how you do this for those visual learners out there.
Just like me.
Yeah, so.
So check the resources page.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.